This week's podcast is brought to you by Free Comic Book Day.
Huzzah!
And end of music. Borag Thung, Earthlitz, and welcome to the 2080 Thrillcast. I am your host, Molchar, and in the sound booth this week, we're joined by Keith Richardson. Hello, Keith.
Hi, Mike. How's it going, dude?
Yeah, fine. Thank you, man. You're here to talk about Free Comic Book Day, which is this Saturday.
Yes.
Right, so let's start at the beginning. For those who are listening who've never heard of Free Comic Book Day, explain what it is, please.
Free Comic Book Day is a day where it's big now in the UK and the US, but basically it's a day where participating comic book stores give away free comics. And over the years, it's got increasingly popular, and it's it allows people to go to comic book stores who don't necessarily usually go there, and it's a day where comic book stores can do some good business, booming business, and introduce new people to the wonderful wild world of comic books. And it's also a good time for us publishers to kind of push our wares and show new readers how great our beloved titles are. And, of course, every year, I think now for the last 6 years, we've participated, kind of showing off the best that kind of 2080 has to offer.
Because we've pretty much always had virtually the most original content of any of the Free Comic Book Day issues. Because publishers put these together, and the vast majority of them are reprint material,
that's
stuff
correct.
They've already done. But why do we sink so much new material into something that's being given away for free?
Well, it's just it just makes it, gives it that much more value. You can put a reprint in, and that's what we did initially. But I think you can't beat having some fresh material in there. It shows that we're making an effort. It's great for our existing readership to get some new material. And, you know, it's good for people out there who might not be well-versed in 2080, but they might know, say, a current fantastic artist like Joel Jones, yep, or Kay Zama. They might be aware of Kay's work in Transformers. It's just another way of bringing new people to our comic to see how great our comic is.
Because we have to apply for this every year, don't we? It's not a given that we take part.
No, we have to apply every year. It's getting harder and harder because Free Comic Book Day, quite frankly, is getting more and more popular. So yes, we do have to apply every year, and there's been a couple of years where we barely made it in, but the feedback is always tremendous, and I love putting it together. I have since the very first time we took part. I think we're in year six now. Feel free to shout or post a message if I'm wrong, loyal listeners. But yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. And like I say, it's getting harder and harder to take part. But it's a wonderful thing to take part in, and it's the Christmas day of the comic book industry.
you always seem to pull out the stops with the people involved. I mean, like I say, we've got Kay Zama, we had Joel Jones last year, we've, yes, got Danny back again this year, we've got Phil Winslade, Matt Smith, we've got Dreams of Dead World strip in there, and also Hope by Guy Adams and Jimmy Broxton, who were on the podcast a while back to talk about it, and you've got a cover by Mike Perkins. But we've had like Eric Powell do a cover in the past, you know, Henry Flint.
Eric Powell done a strip.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah, Aaron Powell on the strip. We've had Mike Allred do a cover in the past.
Yep.
We had a run of I think about 3 years where our very own Henry Flint done some just mind-boggling, fantastic covers.
And of course, he's back in this issue as well, isn't he?
He is, which people who have read up on this year's offering won't know that just yet, so here's an exclusive for you all. But yeah, Henry Flint does make an appearance, and for me, it wouldn't be the same if Henry wasn't somehow involved in 2080 Free Comic Book Day specials every year. He's our very, very lucky talisman.
And no spoilers, but other individuals make appearances, don't they?
Yes, in this Free Comic Book Day, we welcome aboard some new friends of ours. In fact, some, I would call them more than friends, they're lost family members who have returned to the fold. And yeah, they make a welcome return, which should put a smile on quite a few people's faces and make a lot of American people go, huh? What's going on?
you've got so much material for 2080, so many characters. You're trying to, like you say, appeal to established readers to get them into comic book stores, but also to capitalize on this opportunity to grab new readers. How do you kind of keep the balance between those two things?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's quite difficult. I mean, I just go on my gut, basically. So I always like to put stories in, newer stories that I've been thoroughly entertained by. Case in point, this year it's Deadworld, which I absolutely adore. Keck W's writing is fantastic, and Dave Kendall's artwork is just a sumptuous feast. It's beautiful stuff. So, I put in the new stuff that Matt's just commissioned, which is really great. If there's a good old classic that I haven't seen for a long while, I occasionally put them in there. I think a couple of years ago, I put in a really good old Mick McMahon annual story, which I absolutely adore, and I don't think has ever been reprinted before. And then, yeah, when it comes to the new stuff, I just look at other people that are out there. It doesn't really matter. In fact, it's a boon if they haven't worked for 2080 before, because it's good to see their take on some of our great IP, great characters. And yeah, if I find them appealing and I see that they've got some heat in the States in particular, I see if I can kind of collude them into doing some 2080 work. And so far to date, I mean, the listeners will be the judge of this, but I think it's worked out for the best.
Yeah. I've seen people go, oh, why isn't it just one long Dread story? You know, he's the big character. He's the character everybody knows. Why not just do one long Dread story? But, I mean, I guess that doesn't really represent what 2080 is about.
You hit the nail on the head, Mike. That's not really 2080. We're an unashamed anthology, and we always will be. And that's what we know. That's what we love. That's what our readers know and love. So that's always what I would like our 2080 offering to be. That being said, we have slightly compromised this year in that the 2080 Free Comic Book Day Special Prog is US size as opposed to our normal size. But that was a stipulation of the Free Comic Book Day entry rules. So please, all complaints on a postcard to... I won't say, but not us. It's not our fault. It's still as Zarjazz as ever, just in a slightly smaller format.
It's compressed. It's compressed thrill power.
Compressed thrill power. Yeah.
One thing I did want to talk about, the covers over the last few years have always seemed to reference in some way, shape or form your love of classic superhero comic book covers. And this year is no exception because you've got Mike Perkins doing a kind of Judge Dredd take on the X-Men Days of Future Past.
Oh, you spotted that.
Oh, yeah. It's fairly blatant. I mean, is this just you having a bit of fun with some commissioning cash?
Pretty much, yeah. Look, I'm an unabashed Marvel fan from back in the, well, mainly from the 70s. I love those old covers. I mean, there's not a dud amongst them. And again, it's going to be familiar territory for a lot of American readers. So I just see it as another way to kind of encourage them to pick up the prog when they go into their comic book store. But yeah, they are all homages to, mainly all homages to Marvel Comics covers of the past.
And if Free Comic Day is always really busy. People say, oh, I wasn't able to get the 2080 Free Comic Book Day issue. If people are going, oh, shall I bother? What would you say to them to get them to go along on Saturday?
I would say undoubtedly yes, bother, because you're getting a brand new Dread story, you're getting a brand new ABC Warriors story, you're getting a very special Henry Flint piece as well. Yeah, why not? And also, oh, I almost left out a rather fantastic Anderson story by Danny and the great Dan Abnett. So, of course, you should go and get it. Another thing about the Free Comic Book Day prog is that this is the only form it will appear in. It won't be digital. And I know that makes some people angry, but the whole point of Free Comic Book Day, as we've already mentioned, is to get people into comic book stores and support their local comic book stores. And by virtue of doing that, they're supporting the industry. So it would just be too easy if we made it digital, because no one need to go out to the comic book stores. So this is the only chance you're going to get it unless you're lucky enough to be at a bigger con later in the year where we, if we do have any spare copies, we will have them at our booth. But this is the one and only chance to get it and read New Thrill. So I would say yes, go out to your local comic book store first Saturday in May and pick this thing up.
Well, start early because queues do form.
Start early, yes. Yeah, indeed.
Absolutely.
It gets
absolutely.
Very, very busy.
And if your comic book store doesn't carry 2080's Free Comic Book Store issue, make sure that next year you lobby them so that they order plenty. Well, thanks very much, Keith, for coming in.
No problem.
Looking forward to this Saturday and seeing what the response to the issue is.
Fantastic stuff. And I'll talk to you later on this year about something even more ghastly than this.
Thanks very much to Keith for coming and explaining a little bit about Free Comic Book Day. If you've been to one before, then you know how this works. If not, then get along to your local participating Free Comic Book store. You can find out which stores are participating by going onto the Free Comic Book Day website. And there is a little kind of store finder. You put your postcode in there and it will tell you where your nearest one is. And don't forget that we have a Free Comic Book Day signing at Gosh Comics in London, featuring Dan Abnett, who will be on the show in a little bit, Richard Elson and Rufus Daiglow, and they've got loads of other guests as well over the course of the day. That's 4 to 5pm on Saturday. Make sure you go along. Queues will be forming early, so yeah, don't miss out on this opportunity to meet Dan, Richard and Rufus. One of the stories in this year's Free Comic Book Day issue is Black Blood General Public by Pat Mills and new artist Kay Zama, who some of you may well have met at the 40th anniversary event in February. For those of you who don't know, Black Blood is a member of the ABC Warriors, a bunch of robots that have long been stars in our pages who are resistant to atomic, bacterial and chemical warfare, recruited to bring peace to the Red Planet's frontier colonies. Among their number is Black Blood, a treacherous ex-Volgan jungle fighter who drinks the oil of dead robots. We gave Pat Mills a call to talk about General Public and working with a brand new artist. Black Blood General Public. Pat, tell us a little bit, because the genesis of this story is actually quite interesting.
Yes, it is, yeah. And it's a little sad, actually, because if you go back to the Balkan Wars of the 90s, I believe a reporter was interrogated and possibly tortured because he was referring to the general public and what they thought of whoever it was, the Serbians or the Croatians. And they because the name has a very Slav sort of edge to it, his interrogators believed that General Public really existed. So I think he had quite some difficulty in actually saying to them, no, it's purely a phrase. So clearly for a robot, he wouldn't be able to necessarily comprehend that subtlety. And particularly for a Slav robot like Black Blood. So he sees General Public as his greatest enemy. It's a very kind of Inspector Clouseau, shot in the dark kind of thing.
Well, of course, because Black Blood is and the ABC Warriors are all tied into the whole invasion and savage storylines, aren't they?
Yes, they are, yeah. The ABC Warriors always needed a major enemy. So right from the beginning, it was the Volgans, yeah.
And let's talk a little bit about the artwork on this, because Kai Zama is new to 2000 AD. She was found, I think, on DeviantArt by Keith Richardson, who's edited the Free Comic Book Day issues. What did you think of her style when you first saw it?
Well, what Keith sent me was a single image of Kai's, which I was very impressed by, which was forms the opening picture, actually, of General Public, and that is it's a throne of guns. It is really very, very impressive. obviously in the same tradition as Game of Thrones and so forth. But it really does suit Black Blood very well. So that partly sold me. I looked at the rest of her artwork. It's fantastic. And although she obviously has that whole manga background, there's something very European and quite Simon Bisley-esque, I think, the style that's used here.
Yeah, absolutely. It really evoked, almost immediately evoked Bisley's work on The Black Hole. It's really nice. I mean, having seen the artwork now, what do you think of Kai's work on General Public?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, I'd love to work with her again on something because I think she has it's a very 2000 AD feeling. And it's my understanding that she specializes in robots. I think does she draw Transformers?
Yes, she's done some Transformers stuff, yeah.
It's great to find an artist who especially likes drawing robots, and it's my understanding that she's a huge fan of ABC Warriors and clearly Black Blood in particular.
There's a wonderful panel just on the second page, so I don't think it's too great a spoiler, where they're talking about Black Blood's obsession with General Public and the fact that he, in many ways, he's a figment of his own imagination. And one of the characters says, basically, he wants to kill everyone on Facebook. And the other person replies, I have some sympathy with him there. are you expressing some of your own views with the characters there?
Yeah, I mean, I think I pursue that further in the regular series where they have Mind Book or Thought Book or something, and the idea is that, and I'm sure it's a possibility 50 or 100 years from now where people obviously communicate by thought mail, and so everybody's sort of sending thoughts to each other and not living a real life. And of course, that's the whole thing, isn't it, with social media, that it has its dangers, to put it mildly.
Is there a certain amount of glee that you have when writing Black Blood?
I really enjoy writing Black Blood because I'm trying to think why. I think it's because there's all sorts of villainy that I can feature in him, which I probably can't feature elsewhere. For instance, betrayal is his big thing. So one example is he pretends to be on a 12-step recovery program. Which alcoholics go in for, where on occasion they will have to ask the forgiveness of the people they've wronged. So he pretends to be on one of these things and ask forgiveness of the ABC Warriors. He's just taking the piss out of them, really. And in a similar way, I don't know if you recall those begging emails that would come through that everyone would get, these junk emails where, I am the widow of so and so, and I have $15 million dollars in the bank, and I want to pass some of those on to you for helping me, all this kind of stuff. So Black Blood goes in for all those kind of betrayals, and I think that makes him a very fresh character. In other words, he's evil. He's not a pantomime villain. He comes out with these unique ways of betraying, doing awful things, and so much so, in fact, that he's actually a registered hangman of the Church of Judas. And if all that sounds very comic book and eccentric, it's not actually as crazy as it might seem, because there have been tribes, I may have been in South America rather than Africa, who, when they were given the Christian message, actually subscribed to a kind of to seeing Judas as the person they wanted to worship. So I think for robots, you know, as and when they become sentient, you know, what their response would be to the Old and New Testament has some interesting possibilities. And again, if that seems ridiculous, the Vatican actually has an observatory, I think in California somewhere, where they're looking for alien life with a view to when it's discovered, bringing them the Christian message. So all these things are great fun to explore, particularly with Black Blood.
One thing I've always liked about the character is he's usually quite upfront about the fact he's going to betray everybody. I think it's either in the Black Hole or in one of the other stories with Nemesis, where he's talking to Hammerstein. He basically, I'd kill you all if I could.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, he was created as a kind of treacherous robot, and in the very first saga, they operated on him so that they could use his military skills, but he would comply with the kind of the sort of Western Anglo-American power block. And so he's always been a very reluctant member of the ABC Warriors. And for several recent years, he's left them and got together with various Vulcan robots. Yeah.
Another fan favourite who will be appearing in this year's Free Comic Book Day issue is Judge Anderson and Dan Abnett and Danny, who's a Greek artist you may remember from last year's Free Comic Book Day issue, where she worked on Fiends of the Eastern Front. They've come together for a strip with Len O'Grady called Hag Team, which sees Cassandra Anderson encountering some old foes from Dredd's world. We talked to Dan and Danny on Skype about collaborating, about Danny's first work on Judge Anderson for us, and also the last time Dan Abnett worked on Judge Anderson. So it's lovely to welcome to the Thrillcast Mr. Dan Abnett.
Hello.
And Danny Kay.
Wow, or Danny.
Welcome both to the podcast. Dan, I'll come to you first. Is this the first time you've written Judge Anderson?
I think it is technically the first time I've ever written her in comic strip form. I think the absolutely very first thing I ever did for 2000 AD was a Judge Anderson text story for an annual.
Wow.
Which is like 1992, something like that. That was the first thing I ever did. So it's been a long time coming to actually write a comic strip with her in it.
And was this something that Matt pitched to you or?
Yes. Yeah, it was suggested. I sort of jumped at the chance that Judge Anderson is you know, a clearly defined and sort of very, very obvious 2000 AD character to do a story about. And it was just a lovely opportunity to do that.
Danny, I mean, you've done some work for us before. You did a previous Free Comic Book Day issue with Fiends of the Eastern Front, but set was in Cambodia, was it, or Vietnam?
Vietnam.
So this is something slightly different. What was it like to have the opportunity to draw a character like Judge Anderson? Because I've seen one of the sketches you did at the 40th anniversary event in London in February, which was a really nice rendition of her. Was she a character that you knew and liked?
Yeah, I liked her and was really exciting to draw her. So I really liked it, and I was looking forward to it. I wanted to ask these guys to give me this job. But they were quicker.
Beat you to the punch. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your background, because you're an established comic artist. You're new to 2080, but you're an established artist, aren't you?
Am I?
Yeah, I certainly think so.
Okay, nice to hear that. Well, I was studying fine arts in Athens. I live in Athens, in Greece. And I was into sculpturing. And I was making comics before that, but not professionally. But I wanted to do like this. I wanted this to be my profession. So I tried to do it and it worked a bit. It's still working, so... Yeah, that's my background, basically.
Okay.
Art, sculpturing.
And how did you come into contact with 2008 AD?
A couple of years ago, I was at the Supercon in London. Mm-hmm. And Keith was passing by my table and he asked whose art was this. And I said, hey, it's mine. I said, oh, it's nice. Here's my card. Take it. And sent me an email. So that's how it happened.
Did you feel any nervousness about tackling a character like Judge Anderson?
Not really. I don't know. No, not really. I just want to make things right, and I just enjoyed the whole thing. So, no stress. I wasn't stressed or something. I just liked the whole thing. So, it wasn't something different from what I do.
Did you draw on any previous artists on Judge Anderson as inspiration for the way that you present her?
Yeah, I mean, I had a comic book open near my pages and I was mostly getting inspired, not like copying or looking the features or whatever, just getting inspired of pictures I like.
Okay. Dan, you've probably made Keith very, very happy by including Trapper Haag in this story. Was this something that he suggested? Because he suggests it for everything.
I believe he did. Yes, obviously it was a pleasure to put that character in there because it's sort of a tip of the hat and a note of respect to the late Steve Dillon, and I think that's one of the things that prompted him particularly for this story to suggest it. Hmm. So to take that character that Steve was most particularly associated with drawing for 2008, I think it is a nice thing. It's a nice thing for it to appear there. And it was sort of ideal for the sort of story this is. It's a five-page story. It's a very, and I mean this in the nicest way, it's an old-school 2008 story. It's a done in one, five pages, beginning, middle, and end, which I think Danny's drawn brilliantly. And I it's very nice to have that feeling of it could be something that came up in one of the early issues of 2008 AD where there wasn't so much of serialized long-term stories, but just completely self-contained stories.
I know that John Wagner has said, you know, he as time has gone on, he's found the short stories, the one episode, the two episode stories, actually more difficult to write. I remember not to make you feel too old, but reading things like Galaxy Rangers back in the 80s, which you worked on, and those similarly were just, you know, one and done little stories. Have you found any difficulty as time has gone on, you know, kind of finding, I guess, ideas for just five six pages? It's ideas that will fill that space, but you know, won't overflow.
I think that's the key thing. I mean, doing stories that fast that are delivered in five-page installments, it just is incredibly greedy in terms of eating up ideas. Mm. That's the thing. But it is absolutely the mainstay of what British newsstand comics were through the 50s and 60s and 70s, up to and beyond the beginning of 2008 AD, is that each week, even if it was an ongoing character, an ongoing strip, it would be the next story and it would be down in five or six pages. There is something very satisfying about that. There's something very pleasing about being able to construct a story like that. I know exactly what John means because actually there are only certain stories that work in those constructions. Everything has to be done with such economy to give the story enough weight, and you can't spend a long time hanging about doing character development or anything like that. You've got to get it done. So for an ongoing comic back, you know, I don't know, warlord or battle or action, it was that sort of cumulative effect of repetition. And these days, 2000 AD generally has longer running story arcs. I mean, something like, you know, something like Brink, for instance, that I'm writing now has a very sort of extended storytelling style. You know, it is really dwelling on the character moments and building up very, very slowly. So I've always enjoyed being able to switch between a long, complex story arc through a series. And then, so for instance, just in the stuff that I'm doing for 2008 at the moment, Brink is a really good example of something that's a long, long, complex story arc. Kingdom, which is just finished, would be another example of a fairly long story arc. But both Grey Area and Sinister Dexter have always had longer arcs mixed with done-in-one stories. You know, sort of monster of the week, job of the week, problem of the week type stories. And I think that's a sort of, I'm very pleased to maintain that habit of trying to do stories in the smallest possible space, because I think it keeps the focus there. And I think it's something that fewer and fewer writers are doing in comics, mainly because there are fewer and fewer opportunities to do stories that small. And there is, as I said, a huge amount of satisfaction in terms of stripping away everything that doesn't need to be there down to the absolute bare essentials to make something work in that 5-page beat.
And Danny, I mean, like I said, you've done work for us before with Fiends of the Eastern Front. You've done a Judge Anderson. Is there a character or a strip that you are desperate to work on for us?
No, I really don't know. I think I just wanted Anderson that much. And basically whatever, I just like everything, so I don't have something in particular to No, I don't know. I'm just open for everything. I can do whatever you want. That's it. Another dream was Judge Death.
Yes.
But
Well, that always seems to be the ambition of people who want to draw Anderson. It's always in the company of old Sydney, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you get one, you want the other one. So.
And just thinking about what Dan was just saying about you know, not being able to with such a small amount of space, not being able to waste any time or spend too much time setting things up. From an art point of view, how important is it to kind of, particularly in that first page, get all of the kind of visual cues and the ideas and the personalities straight away? I mean, is the first page of the story exactly how you envisaged it, or did you have to work away at it?
Well, it's, I guess when you deal with so not so many pages, it's the space is so valuable, and you have to organize your page so it works, and then your panels so they work and you can show whatever you wish to show. And that's it. It's you have to make things, because it's small, but it has to be exciting and not boring. You just have to work on organizing. I don't know. I'm really bad at that. Sorry. I'm really sorry.
Do you normally work in black or white, or do you normally colour your own stuff?
Black or white. I'm really not good with colour and talking. These are my two bad things.
And so I mean, something like the Fiends of the Eastern Front strip that you did was very dark, very moody, lots of blacks. Mm-hmm. But this Anderson story has been coloured by John Charles, who's somebody who's worked for 2080 for many years. Did you have to change the way that you drew because you knew it was going to be coloured?
Yeah, when Keith told me it's going to be coloured, I tried to not make it so sketchy, and like because my lines, sometimes I don't close things. I don't know how to describe it well. I just leave spaces, and I know that that's a bit difficult when someone wants to color it If you leave many spaces, you have to be more precise, something like that, I guess. So, yeah, I didn't do it so sketchy. I did it more more close, the design. I don't know how to describe it, sorry.
No. So I guess you've got to just leave room for, yeah, be a bit clearer, leave room for the colorist to actually get on with their job.
Yeah, to be more precise with the design, so the colorist will understand where things end and where things begin. I don't know.
And Dan, you're actually going to be at Gosh Comics on Free Comic Book Day with longtime collaborator Richard Elson.
Yes, indeed.
And also Rufus Daiglow. They've got a hell of a lineup for the day. I understand why we do Free Comic Book Day, but from a creator point of view, from somebody who's worked in comics their whole career, what is the value of something like Free Comic Book Day, do you think?
I think it sort of speaks for itself. I mean, comics are in some respects in this world at the moment incredibly successful. The comic book culture has permeated mass entertainment and everything like that. Yet people are still often bewildered by the actual source material, that is to say the comics themselves. Unless they happen to know where there's a good comic shop, it is quite troubling and difficult and peculiar about, you know, where to get comics unless they are following something that is newsstand available like 2000 AD. So the sort of the greater world of comics is often almost like a secret club that you need to be inducted into, and I think Free Comic Book Day is precisely that. It is a very obvious enticement to get people to come into comic shops and anywhere else that's celebrating it with a promise of free goodies, which is great, and often an opportunity to sample things that you might otherwise not. Perhaps not risk or not worry about whether you're going to enjoy or not. So Free Comic Book Day, I think it sort of embraces people who are very interested in comics, but not particularly savvy and want to know more, and want to have the opportunity to talk to people and to sample things. And I think that is a great thing. Quite recently, in fact, I did a talk at a local school in Maidstone where I live, and all the kids in the classes were really, really excited about comics. They wanted to know about comics. They knew an awful lot about comic book characters because they've seen movies and stuff like that. But when they, towards the end, I said, have you got any questions? And they put their hands up and says, where do we get our comics from? It never occurred to me that the people wouldn't know that they needed to go, you know, there were things like 2008 AD you could go into your newsagent and buy, and that there were other things, American imports, and for instance, that you needed to find a specialist dealer, and that perhaps you needed to order them in advance. And and I started to explain it, and I realized how complicated it was. So Free Comic Book Day can break down that kind of interface between an interested but slightly puzzled public and outlets like comic book shops that will show them all the things they've been looking for all this time. I think it's a brilliant thing. And it's lovely because when you're in a comic book shop on Free Comic Book Day as a creator promoting it, you meet all sorts of people you wouldn't normally meet because people are coming in sort of on just by chance, sort of just to see what's going on. And it's very exciting. Do you see the encouragement and excitement light up in them? And I think that's great. It's sort of an ambassadorial effort on behalf of the comic book industry to show that it's inclusive, and I think that's great.
Brilliant. Danny, do you have Free Comic Book Day in Greece?
Well, some comic shops do some events, but nothing big. I mean, it's Greece. We don't have a big comic industry. And the first time I got to see a big Comic Book Day event was last year in London for the 2008 Comic Book Day signing last year. And it was the first time I ever saw something that big in a comic book store. So, yeah, we're trying to make events here and make things. I mean, we have some conventions and some comic stores, but we're trying to make it bigger and bigger. So it's in the making.
Of course, it wouldn't be 2000 AD Free Comic Book Day issue if there wasn't a Judge Dredd story, and this year's issue is no different. We have Judge Dredd 40 Years of Hurt by Matt Smith and Phil Winslow with colours by Leonard Grady. It's caused a bit of a stir when the first page went up on the Free Comic Book Day website. People noticed that there's a certain lawman lying on the floor in a pool of blood, and one or two people seem to draw some fairly major conclusions from that. So I thought I would welcome Matt into the sound booth here at the Nerve Centre and get Phil on Skype to talk a little bit about 4 decades of beating up Judge Dredd and what it's like to kill the guy the first time you ever draw him. So I'm joined in the studio by Matt Smith.
Hello.
And on Skype by Phil Winslade.
Hello.
Guys, you've drawn the, well, you've created the Judge Dredd strip for this year's Free Comic Book Day issue, which is 40 Years of Hurt. Matt, keeping obviously spoilers to a minimum, tell us a little bit about the story and what people can expect.
Well, I'll kill Judge Dredd. I thought we got to 40 years and I thought, yeah, we've had enough. So I put my foot down and killed him off in the first page.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's all she wrote.
The end.
Yeah, we're closing it down next week. No. You'll see what's going on. But from the first page, it does look like Judge Dredd has finally come a cropper. Mm. But who knows what's going on? You have to pick up the issue and find out.
You're registered for 2000 AD, and you know you're not inexperienced in writing Judge Dredd stories because you've done stuff for IDW and you've done novels and stuff. Are there sort of is there ever a temptation to indulge yourself and just do whatever you what you've always dreamt of doing to Judge Dredd in a story?
Yeah, I mean, this the idea for this one kind of came about as partly from lots of talk recently about the death of Dredd, and will Dredd ever be killed off? And I had this image of opening with this image of Dredd just lying on the ground, having been shot, And I thought, where could I take that? Because, you know, you're feeding into sort of like the fans kind of, it's a certain amount of trolling the fans, really. You're kind of leading them on a bit. It was this image I had of starting with Dredd dead and then thinking where I could take it. So, there is an element of me having these ideas and thinking, what could I do with them?
Phil, for you, what was it like on that first page? I mean, the first page is online ahead of the release of the comic, so people will be able to see it for themselves. But you've got Judge Dredd lying in a pool of blood with a couple of med judges stood over him. What was it like for you to draw an image like that?
Yeah, well, you know, get to draw Dredd. You know, and the first picture I have to draw of him is him in a pool of blood. It was intimidating. It was intimidating to draw Dredd anyway. But I kind of enjoy it. I read the script beforehand, so I was, I read it all the way through before I actually started drawing it. Mm. So, no spoilers.
Well, we're used to your artwork on Lawless. You know, it's a Dredd World strip. So I guess I kind of assumed that you'd be, I don't know, comfortable, easy with the idea of actually drawing Dredd. But I guess from what you've said, because he's so iconic, because he is the big guy, it's different.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's the trouble with drawing any character that you really like that someone else has drawn really well is that you're going to end up kind of, you know, if you don't watch yourself, you're going to end up just imitating that person. And the trouble is that Dredd's had so many different people draw him in so many different ways, and you really want to. You want to either go for a way that people feel comfortable and familiar with, or you want to go somewhere out there.
and I lost a bottle to go out there, so I kept it fairly straight. But you know, when I think of Dredd, my favourite Dredds are the Mike McMahon or the one of my favourite Dredd strips is an Ian Gibson strip. But equally, I love the Bolland stuff as well. So you know, and then you got Brendan McCarthy and the helmet shape and everything. And it's quite intimidating making choices about where you're going to go with it. And, you know, I tried to keep him sort of like fairly classic. And if I'd had the real bottle, I would have gone for the big round eyes that McMahon used to draw him with and Ian Gibson used to draw him with. But I was a bit worried that people might find that too regressive, if you know what I mean.
Mm. Well, Matt, kind of touching on that point, the strip's called 40 Years of Hurt. I mean, this is a character that by accident has ended up aging in real time in many ways. And when you're doing a story that needs to be done in 5 or 6 pages, but needs to keep people who have been reading it for years happy, but also introduce it to people who are coming to it fresh, but, you know, probably picking up 2000 AD for the very first time in their lives. How do you strike that balance as the writer?
One of the best things about Dredd as a strip is it's so easy to pick up in that you don't really need to know a huge amount of backstory to the character. All you need to know is he's a future cop and who can dispense summary justice, and that's all you need to know about Dredd. So from that point of view, anyone can pick up a Dredd story and should be able to read and enjoy it on that level. But yes, there is. I mean, 40 Years of Hurt is kind of is a title that refers not only to the hurt that Dredd's doled out over the years, but also the hurt that he's sort of, you know, got coming to him as well.
Mm-hmm. Phil, you're normally a black and white artist, but this strip's been coloured by the excellent Leno Grady. Mm-hmm. It's a question I've had to ask Danny, who is the artist on the Joe Jansen strip as well, who also normally works in black and white. How did you have to adapt when you knew it was going to be coloured?
Well, there is the way that most people adapt, which is to leave room for colour, which is, you know, which I tried to do to an extent. But also, a lot of the stuff that you do, you're actually doing for the colorist just so that he knows what's going on. Because if you pull too much away, you can expect a little bit too much out of the colorist. So I find a sort of like balanced way, boost up the outlines a bit so that they respond, and try and maintain as much contrast as possible so that the colorist has got somewhere to go with it without. So, because when you colour a strip, you lose a lot of the contrast, and you know. So that. But the thing about Matt's story is it's such a good little story, and it's so dense that it was more of an issue of just, you know, pushing on and trying to keep things as clear as possible so that the colourist can help that along to make it work. There's lots of little panels in this strip for some reason.
And I mean, looking at your artwork on Lawless, when I'm fiddling with it for marketing stuff, I often zoom right in and it looks very different in an extreme zoom, because the Lawless stuff is quite scratchy. You know, you've got a wonderfully detailed but at the same time quite loose style, whereas Whereas on these pages, it seems like you've really kind of tightened that up quite significantly.
Yeah, I think you have to for colouring, because when you have lines that aren't broken, you know, they look great in black and white, but broken lines and scratchy lines. But colouring, especially computer colouring, tends to sort of like become quite blocky, and it's a difficult thing. You can colour looser stuff in a more watercolory style, but it doesn't suit the colorists to be too broken. It's always good to sort of like give them I think they like edges that aren't inferred, that are more, you know, there, so they know where the color goes to. And also when you put quite dense color on something, a lot of that line work will either disappear or just become very muted underneath. So as I say, sometimes you're just doing that for the colorist so that he knows, you know, where you're going with the lighting, rather than you're doing it for the reader, who the casual reader may not even see it. So that's what I find anyway.
Matt, you've been editing 2000 AD for 15 years?
Yes.
15 years now. But you're not the editor on the Free Comic Book Day issue. Keith Richardson is. Is that odd in any way? Because he sits behind you and you've known each other for years. What kind of editor is he?
Well, he's a very good editor, because he commissioned me to write this dress story. But no, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't commission myself to write a strip. So it's important that somebody else is editing in the comic if I'm writing for it. And yeah, he does a very, very good job of finding new talent like Danny or Kazam, who's done the Black Buzz story, and mixing that with some of the more, you know, more established writers and artists. So yeah, I think he does a very good job, and he's getting pretty experienced at it. Still feels weird seeing somebody else write the Tharg note. I sit there thinking, no, not as large as there. Put a Gaffle Beatty. Don't know anything. But that's just my that's 15 years of being Tharg.
and from your perspective as editor of 2000 AD, what's the value of Free Comic Book Day?
I mean, it's an amazing tool to get 2000 under people's noses. I mean, having done two or three signings on the day, the sheer amount of people that come through the door and queuing up to get their free copies. You know, the comic shops can't get enough of that kind of foot traffic. So it's a great day, and it's you know, so many. I mean, there's 50 titles that publishers have put out, free comic book day issues, of which 2001 is one of them. So there's a huge amount of choice for people to pick up things, and I think it's a great way to support your local comic shop. So I'd encourage everyone to go along and check it out.
And I suppose the question that a lot of readers will want to have answered is, what does it do for 2000 AD? Do we see a rise in readership as a result? Do we see more books being sold?
I couldn't say categorically that we see a rise, but I definitely think that we get people who don't normally read 2000 AD picking it up. So if we get a few more interested parties, who, you know, just want to check out a particular book or pick up that week's prog, then it's all been worth it, really.
That is all we have time for, Earthlets. Thank you very much indeed for tuning into the 2000 AD Thrillcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe on iTunes. If you're on there, do please give us a star rating and a little review. It all helps spread the word about the Galaxy's Greatest Comic, and we appreciate every comment we get. You can also listen on Podomatic and SoundCloud. Make sure you head along to your local participating comic book store this Saturday for Free Comic Book Day. Make sure you go early, because the 2080 issues always go fast. Until next time on the official 2080 podcast, Splendid Verthrig Earthlets.
Alert! 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 Full power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Read 2080 every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagents now. Subscribe to the Galaxy's Greatest Comic at 2000adonline.com. Subscribe digitally on our apps for Apple, Android, and Windows 10. And download DRM free copies from 2000adonline.com. Alert! Alert! Stand by for urgent updates. Search for 2000AD on Twitter and Facebook. Watch the latest videos at youtube.com/2000ADonline, and follow on Instagram at Insta2000AD. Program complete. Shutting down.